If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks for closet Christ. The show is the voice of the Ashtar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with destiny.
Greetings in the supreme love of the one that is the all that is. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command, Cosmic Pep Talks for Closet Christs. This evening, our seminar topic is The Mystery of Cosmic Origin. The One as All That Is. So if you're ready, call yourself forward and present into this moment. Try to drop aside all other distractions and just be quiet. Be quietly present here and now. Relax. Allow your jaw to part and relax. Allow your shoulders to come down and relax. Take a deep breath. And call forth and evoke the descent of the Divine Spirit through the top of your head, through the brain, through the nervous system, throughout all the portions and cells of your body. Allow as much of your divinity, your true self, to occupy the form. Bringing all of your personality into service to the Divine Spirit that you are. That is genuine empowerment. To bring all of your personality into alignment, in service to that great I Am that you truly are. And quietly attune yourself to the environment in which you find yourself. Notice the sounds. Notice them without preference and without resistance. Some of you may be in a very quiet place. Some of you may be surrounded with sounds and noise. We have to learn to come into harmonic fellowship with life as it presents. We need to come into harmonic resonance. And I'll show you a very simple way to do that. So just listen to the sounds in your environment. Whatever they are, they could be loud traffic, honking of horns, sirens going off, dogs barking, kids screaming, couples arguing, whatever's going on, life is happening. But whatever it is, try to match it with a very sweet hum. It's almost the, what we call in music, the bass chord or the tonic chord. You don't have to get real technical, but just see if you can match an inner gentle hum with the environment around you. I'll demonstrate in my own environment. I'm hearing the air conditioning and the fans, and otherwise it's very quiet here. I'm going to match it with a tone. And allow all of the resistance to go. Just relax. And be at peace with what is. Underneath all of that sound is the deepest well of peace. When you stop fighting life, and when you quit resisting what is, you can be in the most crowded area with the greatest cacophony and find a tremendous peace is present if you don't fight it. And that's how we can be a transmitter, a quieter of agitation when we move through areas where people are really not centered, really agitated for whatever reason. Well, they're agitated because they're not in contact with that deep inner silence and peace. So this is a simple way that you can harmonize with your environment and be a source of peace for the people around you. You don't have to say a word, but just softly place a little gentle hum that harmonizes and synthesizes the sounds of your environment. If you find yourself agitated, you can quiet yourself very quickly by sitting very quietly and still, allowing yourself to relax and take a few deep breaths. You can chant or sing you. Let's do that together. Deep breath. You. And that just brings a centering and a quieting and a harmonizing your whole being. We can also use Om. Let's Om together. Deep breath. And after the allow for a moment of silence where you merge with God. You can also chant the word Shanti, which is the very sound vibration of peace. Let's do that together. Deep breath. Shanti. 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 And it's cut off abruptly. You don't want to extend that last I. So it's Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. And just experience how quiet you become. So it's important to cultivate a quiet body. People who are very, very agitated can't quiet themselves, and that's exacerbating that unrest that most people live in. So it's important to find a place, even if it's just a brief few minutes, where you can sit absolutely quiet. Quiet body, quiet eyelids, quiet mind. When the body is quiet, the mind quiets also, because the body is animated by the mind. And when the mind is quiet, there's no REM, no REM, no rapid eye movement. So you will notice that when your mind is agitated, your eyelids blink a lot. And you find it difficult to sit quietly. It's very important to teach children at a young age to have a time out from life not as a punishment, but as a reward, just a quiet time out where you sit quietly and you don't have to do anything. You just have a time to be still. It's the first step in the Eightfold Path of yoga, where you learn to sit quietly and train the body. Because without a quiet body and a quiet mind, it's very difficult to host that divine self that you truly are. It tries to enter, but then it gets into distraction when it contacts the agitated mind. There's no place for that energy to integrate. It gets diffused. And if the body's not quiet, there's no way to integrate and host that energy. They're teaching mindfulness and meditation and yoga to the children now in grade school to help alleviate the problems they're having with bullying and violence in the classrooms. And it's really succeeding. And they had several young children, around six, that were describing how they quieted themselves when they felt themselves getting hot, as they described it, when they felt their brain getting hot, and when they felt angry and flushed and agitated. And one little girl gave a description that I've shared before with you, but quite a while back, that I thought was the best ever. She said, "When I find my mind getting hot and I'm starting to get upset and angry," she said, "I feel like my mind is like a jar full of glitter that's been shaken, and all the glitter is all over the place. And when that happens, I sit very quietly and I take a deep breath and I allow all that glitter to settle on the bottom of the jar. And then I have a quiet mind and I can go about without feeling angry and hot." And many of the children had very similar experiences and descriptions. But I think that certainly applies to us. You know, our children are agitated because the parents are agitated. And the parents are agitated because no one has really taught them how to quiet themselves and how to comfort themselves and how to harmonize themselves with the environment. They go out and feel there's a hostile world out there, but there's no hostility in all of creation. There's only the peace of God, the love of God, the presence of God. And anything else is something we've imported, because we have become attached to something that's illusory. And it's agitated and disquieted us and caused us to lose our bearing and our sense of centeredness. And so we're going to look today. First, actually, I'd like to share with you what happened to me this morning. The first hours of the morning I always spend in silence with God. Or I would say, immersed in the presence of God. And so this morning I was doing that. I was sitting very quietly and enjoying that sweet scent of the morning air and enjoying the sound of the cooing of the morning doves. And I was pondering man's search for God. And I thought, wow, they created this CERN project, this massive particle collider, and spent all that money and all that energy and all that effort. Why? As an attempt to duplicate the Big Bang and the hope to find God, the God particle. And I thought, here are created beings, men and women, scientists, seeking to find God in a particle, the Creator in a material particle. And that led to something so profound. In an instant, I was shot into, I can only describe it as the immediate eminence of the presence. Everything in my room came alive. The trees outside, the objects in the room, my body, everything became singing, dancing, laughing. Oh, ecstatic presence. I was immediately shot into what is called bhava samadhi. That's when a divine mood grips you and calls you up into such a state of rapture that you can't think, you can't speak, you can't move, you're just absorbed in the immediacy of the presence. I don't know how long it lasted. Hours passed, actually. Finally, it was with some great effort that I was able to lower my vibration enough to speak. But the experience was such that it impressed me with the omnipresent eminence, the palpable presence that's always in us, with us, around us, above, below, to the right, to the left, permeating every single atom and molecule of existence and beyond anything we could imagine or understand with the limitations of the human brain, the human mind. And I hoped that some of that profound silence and peace would transmit through the voice tonight, as part of the gifting of the divine spirit to each one of us. The voice of the instrument is highly encoded, so it doesn't matter so much what I'm saying as the fact that that which is greater is using the instrument to transmit certain frequencies into the listeners, but also into the collective consciousness that we all share. And I wanted to share with you something so exquisitely beautiful. And it's from the 8th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad is God, Bhagavan. So the Bhagavad Gita, Gita means song, is the song of God. And it's beyond beautiful. It's just so exquisite. Because here Lord Krishna is describing creation and how everything came to be. And I'm going to share it with you. Creation happened by the divine resolve, the divine intention, when the all that is, before it became the all in the many, thought, I am alone, knowing no one to love and to share my love with, and no one to reflect that love back to me, with whom I can have relationship. Basically, in the Vedas, it only says, I am one, let me become many. But to give a little context, the great avatar Sai Baba went into a little bit more detail with us, that God was alone. God was lonely. And God wanted to extend love and experience love embodied in each one of us. And that's why the greatest thing we can give our Creator is love. The only thing the Creator does not own is the human heart. It must be given to God. And great is the good fortune if we naturally have love for God. But it's hard to love something that's formless. And that's why God took the form of you and me and everyone. Because we all love to fall in love, don't we? We all feel like we're at our best when we're loving and caring and sharing. And when we're in love, the world stops. We forget the world. Or actually, it looks beautiful. We have those rose-colored glasses on. Well, to realize God and become self-realized, that's your permanent state. Because, you know, seldom does the honeymoon last. There comes a point when you get down to the nitty-gritty of trying to adjust to another individual. And that can be a little difficult. It's kind of like two rivers coming together and having to learn how to flow as one. But you see, God had that desire too, to love and be loved. So that is the original primal cause of creation. It's called sankalpa, the divine resolve of the one to become the many. And at that instant, and Sai Baba said that creation sprung up in an instant, this was the way that the Lord clothed himself in the all that is that we call creation, or the cosmos. I'm quoting from the 8th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. This is Lord Krishna speaking. My apparel, which I willed and folded around me, became the etheric plane, Akasha. The etheric got transformed into air, Vayu. The air changed into fire, Agni. The fire turned into water, Jala. The water became earth, Prithvi. The earth grew into grains of food, Anna. The food developed into the body, Deha. So it is clear, is it not, that the body, the Deha, too, is myself? Why doubt this? He's speaking to Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita. So the physical body is called the Anna Maya Kosha, the food, the illusory food sheath. And it is made of the food we eat. That's why it's important to eat food that has been sanctified and purified and recognized as a manifestation of God. One of the simplest ways that we can assure that the food will be able to be digested and will be helpful to us is to first offer it to God. Whatever is offered to God is rendered pure. Whatever it is, it doesn't matter. If you're having an addictive problem, if you smoke, if you drink, offer your cigarette and your drink to God before you partake of it. They do that all the time in some of the indigenous cultures. They would never think of eating or drinking without offering to Pachamama, you know, Earth Mother. And so this is a very common practice amongst all the original people. And when you do that, your food is transformed in what is called prasad, which is the blessed food that is sure to be digested and assimilated And all of the things that aren't healthy for you is transmuted as you offer it to God. So it's very important that you offer whatever you're going to eat or drink to God. When I was in the ashram in India, I noticed before the devotees, the Indian devotees, ate, they would take a little pinch of their food and put it, you know, we ate on banana leaves, and they would put a little pinch of that food by their banana leaf, you know, apart. And I found out that that was how they offered the first bite to God. And it's sweet, because in India, it's like everything is associated with God. You're living in an environment where God is the first thought of everybody. Oh, maybe not in the hustle and bustle of the big cities where people are trying to become like Westerners. But I'm talking about the simple people in the villages that haven't been corrupted yet by our commercialism. And everything is an offering to the Lord. And so the Lord folded around himself the garment, the apparel of creation. He became the etheric. He became the air. He became the water, the fire, which became the water, and the water which became the earth, and the earth which became the food, and the food which became the body. You see how God is in everything, every little molecule, every atom, every single, there's nothing that is not God. There's a wonderful, wonderful lesson I love in the Course in Miracles, where it's you touch everything around you and you say, God is in this table, God is in this body, God is in this banana, God is in these vitamins, God is in that clock, God is in that crystal bowl, God is in that picture. You know, without discriminating, you recognize God is in everything you see, and then the next lesson is, God is in everything I see because God is in my mind. And here we go to the Bhagavad Gita, where God is described as the spark of intelligence that is the light that illumines our understanding. God is the light of creative intelligence. God is the light by which we see. Without God's jyoti, his primal light within us, we couldn't see. We couldn't think. We couldn't create. So everything is animated by this one being that we call Brahman or God or First Cause or Divine Source. And when you contemplate things of this nature, you may have an experience like I did this morning, where you will have a divine rapture, where you're caught up in a very transcendental state, a form of samadhi, and where you're given a great experience like I had this morning, a great vision. In the Bhagavad Gita, in one of the chapters, Arjuna, who was serving, playing the role of the warrior in the big battle called the Mahabharata, and Krishna was serving as his charioteer. And so the Bhagavad Gita is a dialogue between the two of them as they were sorting Arjuna's mind out and clarifying it as to his proper behavior as a warrior and what his dharma, his duty was in that context. But I highly recommend the Bhagavad Gita, particularly the Gita Vahini. Vahini means the stream. And so if you can get a copy of the Gita Vahini from the Satya Sai Book Center here in America, you can get it online. You can read the words of the soul that was Krishna in the words of the Lord Satya Sai Baba. He was the actual Krishna, and he was the Lord Rama. So you're getting it directly. And I was so blessed to be able to take a month's study under Sai Baba back in the late 70s, where he spoke every day on the Bhagavad Gita. And to hear the Bhagavad Gita from the Lord himself, Krishna himself speaking, you know, in the form of the avatar, Satya Sai Baba, was pretty amazing. And each day I would ask, I'd open the Gita at random and ask what Baba wanted me to focus on in my particular life. Every single time I would open to the 11th chapter of the Cosmic Vision. And in that vision, Lord Krishna showed Arjuna that everything that exists is within him. Everything. There's nothing that does not exist inside, within that which we would call God. We live and move and have our being in God. But also, God lives and moves and has his manifestation and creation and expression through us. So we are the show and tell, as I spoke of last week, of the divine. Without the human being walking on earth, there would be no way for people to understand the love of God and the relationship that is truly holy and divine. When two people can interact soul to soul, atma to atma, and with selfless purity, that's the holiest possible relationship. When two people can look beyond the outer form and the outer preferences and all of the self-focus that so many of us have in a selfish way, and begin to live with the well-being of your beloved more important than your own. When you can love another and want them to be happier than the happiness you'd wish for yourself. That selfless love is truly divine. And that's the ultimate purpose of all relationships, to get to that place. So God dwells in every body in the form of the I. You know, we all say I, don't we? And nobody points to their head when they're speaking of that I. They always point to their chest. And that's because that supreme principle dwells within the heart, as like an imperishable divine flame. But it's not limited to the heart, because eventually your whole being becomes a flame of divine adoration, a complete embodiment of the divine. That's why we look to the avatar, who comes forward as a pure embodiment of the divine principle. That's why they are worshipped and treated and regarded as God. That's the function of a pure avatar, to allow us to have a concrete experience of interacting with God in a human form, at least the form that looks human, behaves human. But we all have that potential of developing into an avatar. Once the avatar has to come down from a higher state or plane of manifestation. So it's not something you develop in any human life. You have to come down as an avatar. But in a sense, every soul is an avatar, because we all come down, in a sense, from a higher state of consciousness into the human body. So God dwells in you as you, and experiences and expresses as you. So your divine true self, your Atma, your soul, is indistinguishable from God. And you've never left the Creator, because ideas do not leave their source. And you and I, as individualized divinity, are ideas of love within the heart mind of God. And so it's impossible for us to be separated from God, or to ever be lost, because we're always in God. The only part that thinks it is separate, that gets confused, is the mind. And so the human being is a hybrid of mental energy, which is by its nature separative and definitive. It sees difference and things that don't exist. The mind sees time, space, separation, difference. That's the nature of the mind. And the truth is, we are all one. So the human being a part mental and part spiritual, is that divine creation that's meant to bridge from the animal, because the human form is, in sense, with when it's, you know, just in its ignorant mode and it's not really connected in any way to its divinity, is quite animalistic. And when that mind is stilled and quieted and taught to attune to the higher self, the divine self, gradually that higher self begins to occupy and operate through the human form. And then man can become superhuman. And from the superhuman, divine. And that can be, you know, that depends on, you know, how much you want to engage in the spiritual practices necessary to quiet and purify the mind. When the mind is 100% pure, you have realized God. There's just the God essence that's present and presenting. So basically, you have three levels of life. You have the subhuman, which we could call the demonic. We have the human, which has the capability of as much as 85% divinity, according to Sai Baba. Animals have the ability of up to 15% divinity, according to Sai Baba. But the divine is 100% pure, pure light. And so we all have these tendencies inherent within us. And it's a matter of gradually raising the vibration to conscious awareness. The awareness that's conscious is the light of God within you that enables you to see clearly and discern the real from the unreal, to discern where to place your focus so that your vibrations become more and more attuned to the divine. And that is what we would call spiritual practice. That's what that's designed for. So God is that indwelling presence, is like shining above and beyond the five senses, and yet is related to the senses because it is the primal energy that sets the sensory process in motion. So you could look at the I presence very much like the boss that's managing and supervising employees. And each employee has a particular job. That's why each one of the five senses communicates and relates a particular sensory way of perceiving the creation. And through the five senses, those different areas that each of the five senses gather data, like the taste and the smell and the touch and the form, and the hearing, all of these things communicate, you know, the environment and the creation to which we move. And they're all, of course, related to how we see life and how we interact with life. And so we have to learn how to direct the senses so that they, again, begin to come under the governing of our higher nature, so that they're like the five horses of the chariot that Arjuna his chariot is pulled by five horses, and they represent the five senses. The five senses and their conglomerate, we could say, constitute the mind. And so that's the action part, that the thing that gets us going. We get attracted and repulsed and directed and tossed about by senses that are not trained to serve the higher self. So part of the training that involving our stilling ourselves and quieting ourselves is beginning to direct your senses and to direct the mind so that the senses and the mind serve the objectives of your higher nature. And that desire to do that is sparked by the I, that is the divine self within you. Sometimes it's called the isness, or the Atma, or the Jivatma, whatever you want to call the I. We can all relate to the fact that we refer to ourselves as I. And usually we associate that with our personality. But when we really awaken to what that I really is, we find out it's the primordial source itself. It's God within us. So I wanted to speak a little bit about the wonder of realizing that every single human being contains within the physical form the entire macrocosm of creation in microcosmic form. If you study a bit deeper in the Bhagavad Gita, you will find that all the seven seas are within your body. All of the continents are replicated in your body. All of the things within the greater galactic cosmic realm of things is microcosmically to be found within your body. So when Krishna was describing how he clothed himself in the different dimensions, the different levels, know that you are that Krishna, you're that primal source, that primal creator, that primal resolve to become the many. That's you telling your story. This God that we're speaking of, this Krishna, this avatar, is not separate from you. He's telling your story of how you came to be. And the realizations that you will come to inevitably at some point if you proceed on with your spiritual practice, if you really want to inquire into the self and who you really are and why you're here. And Sai Baba has said that every time you begin to ask yourself, who am I? Where did I come from? Where am I going? What's the meaning of all this? Where is God? What is life? You know, what's the meaning of life? Every time you think along these lines, that is meditation. That constitutes meditation. And so just sitting quietly is the beginning. Learning to quiet your mind and to contemplate and ponder, to ruminate, like a cow chewing a cud. You ruminate over these deep, deep questions. And if you sit quietly with them, that part of you that is the creative divine light within you, the intellect, the buddhi, will begin to reveal the deeper mysteries. If you prepare the place, the quiet place, the revelations will come. And they come suddenly. It's not like you can strategize or plan or manipulate these experiences. I was just sitting there having my morning coffee and listening and enjoying the birds and the sounds and everything when, bam, suddenly I have this tremendous experience. So I certainly, you know, had no part in it. It was given to me through the grace of my divine higher self. Or the grace of my master. But however you define it, it's grace that enables you to have these wonderful experiences, which you will have if you're intent. You know, you're really intent about it. So all of creation instantly sprang into being with the utterance of the primal word, Om. Called the pranava in Sanskrit. In the beginning was the Word. And with that Word, Sai Baba said, everything sprang in an instant into existence. And every manner of creature sprang forth, swimming and flying and creeping and crawling and walking. And within man, God installed himself. Within the heart of every human being, he installed himself. But also as a spark of potential within all creation. Everything has a spark of the divine within it. But within man, it's the seed of Godhood. So God is the seed. When it sprouts and grows to its full maturation, makes you a God person, a God man, a God woman. It goes beyond gender at that point. So at the sound of that word, every manner of creature sprang into existence throughout countless galaxies and universes and suns and moons and planets and all manner of living beings came into existence on every world, every realm, every dimension. Everything that you see, when you look out in a telescope on a night, you know, out in the desert where there's no city lights to interfere, just know that everything you see out there as a star, as an orb, as a sun, as a moon, is teeming with intelligent life. Intelligent life. Each enlivened and endowed with a spark of the Supreme Creator. And within man, God installed himself as the I, with the unique ability of consciously realizing himself as one with the great I Am, the primal source, God. We're the only one. The human being is the only one, mankind is the only one, that has the ability to become self-aware and conscious of divine relationship and union. And mankind also has been given, mankind alone, has been given the task of acting as the caretaker of creation. Creation was given into our custodianship. Take care of creation. And God alone gave mankind the ability to speak for him and as him. So no other creature has that particular ability. We asked Sai Baba about extraterrestrials, and he said, the human on Earth has the ability to consciously choose to come to God because we're in a world of polarity where we can choose not to come to God and just live as an ego or as a demon. And we have the ability to choose to consciously love God and seek union with God. The extraterrestrials, he said, they are much like fish. They spawn, not that they are, you know, fish or anything like that. They're highly intelligent beings. But their nature is to naturally flow Godward. They don't have that, let's say, that polarity in many cases. And I suppose I'm not speaking for all the worlds here. I'm just quoting what Baba said to us. By and large, they naturally flow in the divine current Godward. And it's not a conscious choice on their part, if I understood what Sai Baba said correctly. And he told us there's no place in all of creation similar to Earth or having a similar form as the Earth human, which I find stunning. So apparently it's a tremendous big deal to take a human embodiment on Earth. And I know the Master Jwal Kool from the Alice Bailey teaching said that everything in existence, every being has either been a human being, aspires to become a human being, or has been a human being So apparently, according to Sai Baba, Earth is the only springboard through which we can catapult ourselves back to original source. Again, a very stunning statement that I take his word on that. But so often, those of us who are here from other world systems want to get off the planet as soon as we can get off the planet. And we don't realize the importance and significance of taking a human form. And Sai Baba has certainly brought that to my attention, as has the Tibetan master Dwal Khul, or DK as many of us know him. So that's something, again, to contemplate. How are you utilizing this opportunity? The only purpose of taking a human embodiment is to awaken to your divine self. And when you have fully awakened, your body has been transfigured and transmuted into a light body, which is mortal. So some of these great, great masters, as I've spoken of in the Himalayas, have actually transfigured their body. Well, our Lord Jesus demonstrated it for us. And he actually transmuted the cells of his body through the power of the Holy Spirit into light. And that was foretelling the ability we all have to move into Christ consciousness, perfect relationship and fellowship with the Father, the Creator, and with one another, and to live in such a way that our whole life was ongoing service. He walked through his day, and whatever needed help, he helped them. Someone needed healing, he healed them. If somebody needed food, he gave them food. If somebody needed teaching, he taught them. Whatever presented as he walked through his day, he served them. And that's how we are to live as well. And as our lives become one of ongoing service and seeking to be truly helpful to our fellow men, we purify and purify, because love is the great purifier. As I've said many times, love and ego cannot coexist in the same heart. Hatred and gratitude, or ego and gratitude, cannot occupy the same mind or the same heart. So when your life becomes one of ongoing service and ongoing gratitude and ongoing appreciation, which is the highest gift we can give each other, you know, your whole body begins to be of a very high vibration, and that high vibration is love and light. Love and light are the same vibration. And love and God and light are the same thing. So you purify yourself until, you know, nothing can hold you here anymore. Your vibrations are too high to densify into a mortal human form. And you begin to transfigure into the mortal form. And that's what so many of us are doing now. You'd be surprised if you could really see yourself. You'd be astounded at how brilliant you are and how much light. I can see clairvoyantly. People who've come to visit me recently, I can see right through their body. They're sitting in front of me in divine glory, and they don't even know it. They've got these white halos around their head, just like the saints in those medieval pictures. They're sitting right in front of me. Sometimes I can look right through their body. Their projection here is so diaphanous and transparent. But they don't know it. They don't realize it. And then I point it out. It's like, wow. Sitting there telling me some problem, and you're the divine glory presenting. So we need to learn to identify with the fact that we are the living light of the living God. And we are transmitters and vibrations of immortal love. And we are the emanation of bottomless, fathomless peace. We are that peace that goes beyond understanding. And you don't have to be static and sitting still to be the peace and love of God. You can be moving very efficiently and quickly through life and emanate that core of peace. Radiate that all-embracing goodwill and love. And when you sing that sweet, simple tone to harmonize with your environment, I found that when you're in harmony with your environment, everything looks lovely and loving. You begin to feel with such a tenderness for humanity. Your heart opens. And suddenly the airport is like your, you know, it's like, yeah, it's filled, it's like your home filled with your family, okay? You don't see anybody as an enemy, anyone as separate from you. And what did you do? All you did was drop the resistance. Drop the fear. Resistance is fear. Resistance is withheld loving. Resistance is saying I'm separate and I'm not like that and I don't like that. But what if you just stop the resistance and the not liking and the againstness and you just sought to find the common harmonic and you sang that softly in your mind or inaudibly, gently in your chest. And when you hum those little soft harmonizing chords, notice how it begins to vibrate your thymus, begins to bolster your immune system, begins to open up your throat chakra, begins to vibrate into the cranial capacity so that you begin to resonate the divine sound current more in the brain and in the mind. The mind and the brain are separate, by the way. The mind is out of the body and receives impressions that are interpreted in the brain. So the brain is like the receiver of the transmitter, which is the mind. And the mind, of course, is at a higher level, the buddhi, which is the creative intelligence, that is like the eye of the soul or the eye of God into time space that looks through your interpretive brain and then comes out in your thoughts. So the primal cause is like the primal electricity that gets all the, you know, the little mechanical, you know, those little scenes where they have the trains and all that stuff. It's like the switch that causes the juice to flow and causes everything to be animated. But it's the primal creator, the primal energy, the divine current that's causing everything to jump into life and manifest life. So I hope I haven't been too deep here to where you don't understand what I'm saying. But basically what we're saying here is that God clothed itself with creation and that everything in creation is divine and that we are actually the nature of God. We are the character and nature of God. We are God's essential essence expressing through human form and time space. And along with the creation, there comes a unique quality of God that's called Maya. It's called Mahamaya, the great delusion. And that has to be present because if it wasn't, we would all be awake and God realized and we wouldn't have any, what should we say, school of learning here, school of discovery, school of revelation, school of hard knocks. You have to have that delusion that comes over that clouds our remembrance of who we are as divinity so that the play of separation and differentiation can unfold. Why? Well, apparently, God likes it. What can I say? We as God were curious. We wanted to experience separation and differentiation and the individualized self, and that's all going to serve something in the future, I suppose. Otherwise, it wouldn't be manifesting. I choose to believe that it's fitting us to be conscious gods and co-creator gods as we go forth to create beyond the creation here, which is already completed. Here in this realm, we are revisiting the past. We say nothing as it is today. We are revisiting what has already been done and completed and fulfilled. We are back in time here in the human form on Earth right now, repeating history. And we kind of got caught in a loop where we kept recycling and recycling and recycling. So they had to send in some people who were wide awake and didn't fall asleep, who could walk consciously with us and get us out of this loop that we keep repeating. And Jesus Christ was one of them. Sai Baba is another. Buddha, you know, each one comes to walk in the holodeck program, but not get caught up in it, and to rescue us from getting, you know, staying here forever and a day. So anyway, I believe that that's what we're all in training to be and do in each our different ways. There is a God form, a presentation of God, a master, a co-creator God, or a master spirit on every dimension, in every dimension. Many of them, many, many, many. And so there are many demigods that serve in the various worlds and kingdoms and dimensions. And some of us volunteer for those jobs. You know, there's all kinds of different divine positions that we can occupy. And that's what we're in training to do, to be conscious God beings. And to go forth and create new creations that are being birthed, that are being brand new, that are not in the past, but the future yet to be. So, anyway, that hour went fast today. I hope it gave you a little sense of how everything is God, and there is nothing else but God. And God is love. And your forgetting your divinity is part of the plan. Your awakening is part of the plan. And one day, you will awaken and find you've never left the heart of God. That this has all been a big dream from which you are awaking to find that you are safe and whole as you've always been, at home with God. And, the adventure continues. There is no end to God and no end to you. You are an immortal, divine being, now and forever. Forever one with your Creator. So take a deep breath and dive deep into that deep well of peace. Beneath the agitations of the mind, there is always the peace of God, present in every condition and place in which you find yourself. There is the peace and the love of God. Find your own way to harmonize with your environment, to come into one accord with people, situations, and to be at home, because truly, you live and move and have your being in God, and God in you forevermore. So let's go out chanting on I, you. Deep breath. On I, you. Raise your hands and give your blessing. May all the beings in all the worlds be happy. May all the beings in all the worlds have peace. May all the beings in all the worlds awaken to the divine I that dwells within the hearts of all. Namaste.